Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right. Well, hey, I've got the session right after lunch, so hopefully you guys can stay awake. Everybody's got full stomachs, everything like that. So my name's Brandon. I am a pastor down in San Diego, which there's some other San Diegans here. I live in Santee, East County, and I know these guys in the back, so if they start heckling, it's because they... This is about church planting. We're talking about volunteer teams that hopefully thrive instead of die in a church plant environment. So I'm curious, how many are in a church planting context right now? Most of you? Okay, cool. How many are planting right now? Like, you haven't started, but you're in the process of getting ready to plant a church. Is anybody? All right, go to Colorado to do that. How many have started a church and the church is a year old or less? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, year old or less. And how about anybody at 2 years yet? All right.
In two Sundays,
okay. Very cool. 3 years? A few of you guys?
All right.
Okay. So then those of you that are planted, but like your church is now established, what's that? Who's the oldest church in here? I know Marshall, you've just been around for a long time. 60 years. So he should teach it. Thriving church plant. Yeah. How long? 8 years. Very cool. And where are you from? Oh, awesome. And you flew all the way over here for this conference. Wow, I'm honored to have you in this room. That's pretty cool. So, sorry if there's a guy in the next room I know. So, we just celebrated our second birthday yesterday as a church. So, I was telling these guys, you get to year, 2 years, every year means you're still alive, and so that is a great bonus. So, it's been awesome. It is something that never expected to be doing is church planting. I actually became a Christian in college. And I had a desire to be a nurse anesthetist and became a Christian in college. And so my desires of putting people to sleep, making lots of money, quickly got exchanged for making way less money and maybe still putting people to sleep in a different way. Been married for 9 years. My wife's name's Jamie, and we have 3 kids, which is always the interesting aspect of church planting. My oldest is 5. Her name's Elise. We have a 3-year-old son named Shepherd and a 7-month-old. Hope. And so they're your greatest asset in church planting and nemesis at the same time. And if you have young kids planted, you know what I mean by that. So, but we're 2 years old as a church and just celebrated, like I said yesterday. And thus far, it's been, we've been very fortunate and just seeing God do some really exciting things. And so far as a church is celebrating, probably the thing that we're most excited about by far is there's been 75 people and our church has been baptized. In the first 2 years, so we've seen a lot of people make decisions to come to Christ and make that step of getting baptized. And as a church, we're running just under 400 people now on a Sunday morning, 2 services. And hi, how you doing? Hi. Yeah, come on in. And then just other things that we're just excited about. We want to be a church marked with generosity, and so we have people bring can and box for Sunday. And so we had the opportunity to give close to 20,000 box and canned food items away to food bank in the first couple years. Helped plant 2 different churches, one in Bolivia, and we celebrate our 2nd birthday by helping launch a church there in San Diego as well. So it's been a roller coaster, I feel like I still have no idea, got a grasp on what's going on. And so when they said, hey, you want to teach this breakout or workshop, I was like, I should be sitting there as much as anybody else. So what I want to do, yeah, go ahead.
How many did you start your church with?
Excuse me?
How many was your church originally?
My wife and I, her... sister, husband, and 2 others, so 6.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we moved from Illinois to start the church. So we're not native Californians. So this is our first go around in the land of fruit and nuts and all that kind of stuff. So we're from the land of Lincoln. So it's been an adjustment culturally, an adjustment just with family, being away from family. So there's a lot of things that we're still trying to get a bearing on. But it has been one of those things that God's done a really good work. We've been fortunate to have partnerships with a couple churches in the area, which has been huge. So even though it's a small number of people that came out, the support of some others there made a big difference. So So the topic is trying to look at creating a culture of volunteer teams that actually continue to thrive. And it's one of those things when they say, hey, will you teach this workshop, I kind of had mixed feelings because in our church right now, we have about 60% of the adult attendance, so 160 volunteers of the 250, average attenders. So 60% of that, 80 of the 160 serve in our children's ministry. So they swallow up the majority of the volunteers by far. But the funny thing is, so it's like, oh, wow, so we're 2 years old, we've got 160 volunteers, 60% of the church is doing that. So, okay, that seems like it's doing well. But if you talked to me or talk to our staff, probably the most predominant conversation we're always having is, how do we get more volunteers? We don't have enough volunteers. Like, we've got all these holes to fill. So to say thriving, I feel like you go to conferences and, I don't know, you just feel like, oh, the guy's talking, probably knows what he's talking about. Maybe, but we're still trying to, like, get people in those places as well. So what I did is I asked our staff and I asked some of our core leaders, hey, will you help me write this breakout? Because I feel like, I don't want to be presumptuous, but what are the things you feel like have been key in this? And so we kind of wrote it together, and I'm going to present it. And then what I want to do is I broke it up into four sections when it comes to volunteer teams. And I kind of thought of the church plant mindset. So I want to give some principles that apply within the preparation period if you're getting ready to, get ready to start. Once you've started, to talk about recruitment. Once that's been going, then how do you And then the aspect of appreciation, which any type of thriving volunteer culture better have a lot of appreciation if you want to continue to see those volunteers be active in your ministries. So that's the section, and I want to break it down. And then each one, I want to, at any point in time, if you guys got questions, you want more information, hey, just raise your hand, interject, I'm fine with that. So if we get all the way through it, awesome. If not, I'll tell you to fill in the blanks for those of you who want to make sure you got your blanks filled, but if we don't get all the way through it, so be it. I want to hear what you guys feel like is most pertinent. All right? So, cool. So let's talk to the beginning about, I've got 12 things to cover. Let's talk preparation first. So those of you guys that are, you're getting there, maybe you're moving into a new area, you're getting ready to start the church, and there's a couple of things I think are hugely important if you want to talk about thinking about the volunteers eventually. The first is probably talked about at every single conference, and so I'm just going to reiterate it. It's not something brand new. But if you're thinking about how you're going to get volunteers involved, you need to, in the preparation period, spend the time, do the hard work to craft a compelling vision statement. You've got to craft a compelling vision statement because the vision statement eventually becomes your why. When people are asking, why should I be involved? Why should I be on a team? Why should I serve? That vision statement is going to shape the culture because I'm sure you guys know this, that language matters. Your words create culture. And so spend the time thinking about the environment, who you're going to become as a church, who has God called your church to be in the respective community that you're in. And as you think of that vision statement, it's going to be one of those things that hopefully is compelling because people say, I want to be a part of that. And so my role and my serving on a particular volunteer team is much larger than just that team. It's locked into the vision of this church and the movement of what God's doing in and through this church. And so we moved out to California a year before we started the church, and I bet that we didn't land on a vision statement for the church until probably 4 months before. There was 8 months. I mean, I have tons of different things, scribbles and all this stuff, and we walked through it, and we landed on just this vision statement, to be a loving and life-giving church who brings hope and healing in Jesus' name. And so we said, for us, loving and life-giving, hope and healing are four things that we believe that mark who Christ is and what he brings, and it's what people are searching for. And so by having that be the statement that really hopefully marks our culture as a church, it also then begins to have a way for us with volunteers to call them into the respective areas of service and begin to say, how in the children's ministry are we bringing love and life and hope and healing? How are we at the cafe somehow bringing hope and healing to people? Which you might think it's just about serving food, but like there's a bigger picture to this. And so spend the time crafting a compelling vision statement for the church because then people are going to have a better understanding to the why when you start asking to be involved. Oh, you're fine. You want to grab a sheet. Glad you're here to join us. So that's the first thing. And maybe that's something that materializes as the church starts to develop. You start to meet people in the community and they start to give you a better sense of like, okay, what is God birthing uniquely through this church for this respective community that I'm in? But do the hard work, spend the time, ask the questions, pray a lot to mark that vision statement out. So you'll hear that at any type of conference. I think that's nothing new. But it's proven to be extremely true. second thing in the preparation period, and maybe I should share that just my background. I actually have a business degree. I was going to go into medicine. I wanted to be a nurse anesthetist, like I said. And when I became a Christian and knew I was going to do ministry, I defaulted and got the quickest major I could get out of was a business major. Business administration, marketing, stuff like that. Little did I know how much God would use that, because there's a huge business element to church planting, all the things that go with it. But sometimes business and those mindsets are looked at as less spiritual as some of the other spiritual discipline practices. But I would tell you, in your preparation period, whether or not you're business-minded or not, that is huge to focus on systems over sermons. Focus your time in the preparation on systems over sermons, because we need to become people that redefine what we think is spiritual. Because thinking through systems, I would argue, is very spiritual in its nature. When you look at Genesis chapters 1 and 2, God intentionally, it seems day 1, 2, and 3, created forms and systems and structures. And then 4, 5, and 6, those days, he started to fill those forms and systems, right? So when you look at it, he creates light and dark on the first day, sea and sky on the second day, and then land and plants on the third day. Then the fourth day, he starts to fill the light and the darkness with the sun, the moon, and the stars. And then after the day 2, he had the sea and the sky. And it's on the fifth day that he starts to put the land creatures and the sea creatures in those habitats. And then on the sixth day, he starts putting the land animals and humans where he already had the plants, because they wouldn't be able to survive if the plants weren't there to begin with. So you need to think systems and structure and strategy over sermons, because I would argue, you could be the best preacher, but if your systems stink, your church probably is not going to be very good either. You're going to hit a cap on your ability to communicate and preach, but if your systems are there, it's going to help provide structure for people to move through. Jesus talked about, hey guys, go grab a sheet right down. Jesus talked about, talk about counting the cost when you're building, some type of a structure and the foundation needs to be necessary. Don't get all the way up to the top and then run out of supplies. Something about thinking from the very beginning about what are going to be the volunteer teams that you're going to be asking people to be a part of? What are the roles that are going to come with that team? What's your process going to be in trying to get people involved? Who are they going to contact? Are there going to be forms to fill out? Are there certain criteria that you want for each one of those volunteers to be at in different areas? Because when you get in the launch phase, people just start coming, and if you don't have those things figured out, it's going to be harder to figure those out as people are all saying, hey, what do I do? And they're going to give you the ideas really quickly of what they think should be done in your church. Right. And so do the homework prior and start creating strategy and systems. Sometimes, church planters have different makeups. And a lot of church planters are big visionaries. They're seeing something that is not yet in existence, and they're dreaming of it, and they're like, it's going to happen. God's going to do it. And that's compelling, right? That's what originally gets people to be like, yes, how? I don't know. God's going to do it. You got to find a how person fast. If you're not the how person, then find the how person to come alongside of you. That's a huge benefit to some of the church plan organizations, that they give you project managers and things like that. We planted through Stadia, and we got a how person as a part of our church planting package, which was huge because it was so helpful to make sure that we had those things thought out. And it's spiritual. You're thinking ahead. This isn't, trying to be, instantaneous for the Holy Spirit to work. Like, the Holy Spirit's working in the planning and the preparation. And so when the people come, you've already created this form and structure for them to be a part of. And I'm telling you, that's going to gain a lot of attention from other people, because over and over again, we've heard our church is like, y'all have thought through things. Which is, think of the flip side of that. The flip side of that is the reputation is church plants don't think through things. That's what I'm, you guys, have your stuff together. It's like, well, why wouldn't we? This costs a lot of money. Moved across the country. I want to make sure that we do it well. So think systems over sermons, because you'll get a chance to write all the sermons you want at some point. Or in today's world, a lot of people just take them from the internet. So figure it out with your systems. All right? It's a big, big deal. So vision statements and creating structures. When you're thinking of those systems, one of the things I want to say is think seasons and sustainability. So you're thinking of volunteer teams and a preliminary aspect. think seasons and think sustainability. What I mean by that is, those of you guys getting ready to plant, or if you've already planted, you know that first part is just, it's all hands on deck. It's like, there's no such thing as specialization. Like, I want to do this. Tough. You're going to do that and that and that and that. Right? It's all hands on deck. And you need to have that idea of realizing that what we're calling people to early on, there's a season for that, and it's probably going to take more effort, more time, more energy, more commitment. But be thinking ahead of like, but that's not sustainable. And how am I already going to begin thinking of ways that I can go early on? So what we did is we told a particular children's ministry volunteers, because the children's ministry volunteers usually start with one service, right? They don't ever get to see that service. They're with the kids. And we need them to be with the kids and to do well with the kids. And so what we quickly said is, like, you know, we want to make sure that we're taking care of our children's volunteers. And so what we did is we created something for them prior to the service so they could come in, be part of where the band was practicing, and we did some type of little devotional with them. And then we told them, we are going to move to two services as soon as we possibly can, not to get more people, but to get you in an opportunity to get into that service. Yes. And when you start communicating to people that you're thinking about them, as much as you're thinking about all the non-existent people that you hope start showing up at your church, they're more apt to be like, okay, like, at least they're aware that this is a sacrifice. And so think those seasons. And the sustainability is, you know, the volunteers that we have, they're such a gift from God. I mean, they work full-time jobs, or they're at home with their kids, or whatever the case may be. They are not living and breathing ministry like you are, and I am, every single day of the week. And so every hour and every moment they give you is extremely precious. And so think as if you were not employed, or whatever the case is, in your church plant, what would you be willing to give? What would you actually have time to give? I mean, my wife, that's one of the reasons I told her, you're not ever allowed, unless you somehow convince me, to be the children's director at our church, because we call our children's ministry base camp. I was like, we have base camp in our house every single day. And that's the nature of our church, is we have a ton of, you know, young parents with young kids. And so we also said from the beginning, we want to have grandmas and grandpas or empty nesters that are going to be in our children's ministry. And so we were communicating those things before we even began, which told our volunteers, we're with you. And that carries a ton of relational capital down the road. All right? So systems over sermons, and then the compelling vision statement. Any questions in that regard? I said those two things in preparation. Anybody that's in that phase right now, did you have specific questions on any of those two? All right. Easy enough. Yeah.
You're providing something for the children's ministry volunteers. We did that, but we also found out that many of them had kids. So, you know, they're also giving their kids up earlier.
Yeah.
And bringing them, and then now we have to find care for their kids. So.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Yeah, and a lot of things early on, the kids came in there with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those that we were going to be kid-friendly no matter what.
It pushed us to two services, I think, too soon.
Too soon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, again, like you're saying, maybe you can think through how better we could have done that. So.
Yeah.
So good advice on that.
Yeah, kids are a gift from God, and they're tricky to deal with in organizational structure, right? Like, I don't want to sit in a breakout that says, how do you do small groups with young kids? Because that is not something we've figured out at all. So any other questions in that section of preparation? Okay. All right, so recruitment. All right, how do you get volunteers? How do you go about getting the people to serve? A few thoughts on that. The first is, I would say, start yesterday. That's the first thing. Since moving out to California, one of the things that I wasn't familiar with are charter schools. They have these extra, you know, you ever know what charter schools are? Okay, so they didn't have those in Illinois. And there's a lot in San Diego that now have a very language-specific focus to learn multiple languages, because we found, and you know, people know that kids learn foreign languages or multiple languages, the earlier the better, right? Because it's just, they're at a place where they're explosive in what they take in and what they learn. And so if you can teach people multiple languages early on, they're going to thrive later. It's much more difficult for you and I to sit in a Spanish class and learn Spanish right now than it is for, you know, a five-year-old. We take that mentality with volunteering. You're creating a culture. You're creating a place where people come and take ownership in what they're doing, and this is when they're at the point they don't know any better, you know, right? This is like, whether they're new to the church, whether they're new to Christ, whatever the case is, we believe that if we start as early as we possibly can to get them involved in serving in some type of a team, it just becomes a natural fabric of what they do in the life of the church that they're now a part of. So I would say to start yesterday, we quickly, from the moment we started getting people on our launch team, tried to do the best we could to give them roles. And some were Christians, some weren't Christians. We'll talk about it in a little bit, how we kind of decided, okay, what did that look like? But we wanted people, because we knew the more that they already were actively involved from the onset, that they would feel like it was their church. And we used language that would say, like, this is our church. This isn't my church. This isn't the Illinois Cruise church. Like, it's our church. And so don't delay. Start in the middle of your launch phases and the opening day of your church. Figure out, hope you got systems in place of how on day one am I already getting in place for people to go connect with us, and I'm going to follow up with them right away. We just helped launch another church this past Sunday. And it went great, but the one thing that was probably is going to be hard is there weren't systems in place to get people involved immediately. And they just lost the whole Sunday. And the launch grand opening is kind of the biggest one. Yeah.
We came across something that was difficult with having somebody that wanted to volunteer that we knew was not the right person for that position. How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, we didn't think in terms of positions early on, because it was all hands on deck. It was like, if we knew there was a person that was really good in a certain area, then we really leaned on them and let people kind of start to see them as kind of the leader in that area. But people put on multiple hats. And so we really didn't start having those types of conversations a lot as far as moving certain volunteers to a different area, probably until the first couple months. But we made sure that we had the right leaders in those places because they were the ones that were going to drive what happened in those respective ministry areas. For us, if it wasn't a liability, then we're going to figure out how they can continue to offer what they believe they have to offer and then make suggestions along the way of places that might be better for them. But early on, there wasn't a lot of specialization of ministry. It was everybody's on every team for us. So. Yeah.
My pastor says it's best just to get people on the bus, and then later on you can figure out what the right seat is.
Yeah. Which kind of goes, transition to the second one, is when it comes to not only starting yesterday, I would tell you to pray before you pay. There's a culture that we ran into, and maybe this is a Southern Illinois thing, or Southern California thing, because it wasn't like this in Southern Illinois we moved from. But people pay their volunteers, and particularly they pay in specific specialized ministry areas. So they're paying band members, they're paying certain things, and we ran into a huge culture of entitlement that's been created by people getting paid, and no one was willing to just volunteer. And so that's why we said, hey, the specialization thing, we ain't doing that. Like, we want people that are going to be a part of this loving and life-giving community, and that means we're all going to be on deck with this thing. Now, I'm not speaking against the aspect of showing times appreciation through financial compensation. But we also said, like, when you pay certain people in certain positions, you're elevating them as if that's more important. And for us, it's like, it's not more, just because you got a skill playing a guitar doesn't mean you're any more important than holding the baby in the nursery. And so we just didn't go there. You know, and part of that was driven by, you know, when Jesus is talking about, he says, ask the Lord of the harvest for workers. And he says, to raise up your eyes. And he said that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And so we said, we're going to pray for volunteers. We're going to pray for people who have willing servant hearts to be in these areas. And we want, even when it came to the band and stuff like that, we want them to be people in our church, even if it means that our quality suffers early on, because we want to believe in what God's doing, because we want them to have ownership rather than entitlement. I came out of a church, I moved out here, I was in a church that was 5,000 people. Specialization is what you did. When you get to that level, you've got a lot more volunteers, so you can say, oh, cool, you get to do this because this is your unique wiring by God. But like, in a church plan, it's like your unique wiring by God is just get your hands dirty, let's get after it. Right? We're all in this together. And prayer, God hears those prayers. I mean, he said, ask the Lord of the harvest to raise up workers. And so we actually had a definitive point, you know, with my wife and I and then my in-laws. You know, when you start a church, you're thinking, we want to connect with those people who are disconnected. We want to reach the lost. And that's it's an incredible desire. That's what drives us to start churches. But it was weird for us because about 4 months before our launch, we started to pray not to have lost people come anymore. We said, we need, like, seasoned Christians to get here. Like, because we need people to pour into the lost. We need people who actually have a ministry mindset a little bit that can help carry out some of these things. And so it felt like, am I allowed to pray this? You know, because Jesus came to seek and save the lost. But, yeah, but we need people. And so we started to pray. And I'll never forget when we got our first couple that was in Santee, established Christians, and they said, we want to be a part of this. It was huge for us. But we asked God for 3 months leading into it before they finally came. And so don't underestimate prayer. Don't underestimate crying out to God, asking for these volunteers before you pay them. Because if you pay them now, you're probably going to pay later. You're going to pay one way or another. So I just would rather just be more precautious along the way. Next thing, number five, lead by example. This is one of those things that I think we know as leaders that, you know, people are going to follow us and what we do. You know, I was raised in a family where it was just, you know, blue collar. Everybody contributes. We're all in this family together. And so it's not like that I just do sermons and preach on Sunday mornings. It's like from the get-go, I'm the one opening up the trailer. I'm the one setting up the chairs with all the other guys. I'm the one staying at the end to tear stuff down. I'm the one coming around, rallying people, saying good job, expressing gratitude. It's not because I don't want to lose or relinquish control of those things. You know, Sunday morning at 4:30, I'd much rather not be doing that, to be quite honest. But it has created a culture of like, I mean, people say, our pastor's right there beside us. And early on, you can't sacrifice how much that means for your community. Because when they see that you're one of them, then they're like, oh, he gets it. She gets it. They're with us in this. Lead by example. Don't be a diva. Like, and I mean that. Like, I there are certain church plans that come across, and it's like, and this isn't to try to knock them, but it's like, you know, well, I only do this, 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 and this. Cool. Your congregation is going to see that, and that's the attitude you're going to set in the congregation early on. Lead by example. And then what happens is now at 2 years, we have people now that are like starting to come to my defense. Like, I don't need, but they're like, hey, we want to figure out a way so you don't have to come set up. I mean, it'd be great for you to be able to do this, this, this. And so they're like seeing that. And so now we've got more volunteers that stepped up. And I still come to set up because I like hanging out with the guys, but I don't need to be there anymore. And they recognize that. But they're the ones who had my back before I said, hey, I'm too good to do this kind of stuff. So lead by example. Because think about Jesus, right? My favorite virtue, yes, I love the love of God, but my favorite virtue of God is integrity. There's nothing that Christ asks us to do that he himself has not done first. And so, you know, part of that for us is I take a month off and I serve in the children's ministry every summer for 1 month. I don't preach. I help check in kids. I've been in every single team in our church. I've been a part of the First Impressions team. I've stood behind the cafe and served donuts. They don't want me to do production because I'm horrible at it, but I've been back there. But it helps you be around people and just champion them and encourage them. So be on the teams that you even created because you're going to help them see whether the systems you created were beneficial or not. So lead by example. Sixth thing, communicate the why as much as the what. When you're recruiting people, communicate the why as much as the what. A lot of times you just want warm bodies, you just need the role filled, you want it happening, but if you communicate it like that, it's just they don't see the big picture of what's going on. And that's part of coming back to the crafting a compelling vision statement. But like when we recruit people in our volunteer teams, we say things like, so if it's the First Impressions team, we tell people, and this is an Andy Stanley phrase, but we tell them, you are the sermon before the sermon. Like you're the first impression. Why is it important to be on the First Impression team? Because they've had way more first impressions before they even get into the service. You're the sermon before the sermon. And so we want you to help create a loving and life-giving atmosphere here by how you smile, how you shake hands, how you hug people. Why serve in the children's ministry and base camp? Because the next generation of preachers and teachers and ministers of the gospel of Jesus are sitting right there in those classrooms. So this isn't just because we want you to hold babies. It's because the kingdom of God is going to advance starting right now in those young kids' lives by you being a part of that. And that's way different than like, hey, can you come and just check in kids for a little bit? And that's what you want them to do, but that's not the why behind it. You know, why do we tell people, hey, you want to be a part of our roadies team, which is our set of teardown? It's because you're actually making a dream come into a reality, because we meet in a school, and so we transform the space. It's like you're helping make a dream come into a reality. Why be on the production? Because you're enhancing people's opportunity to worship God. Why are you wanting me to be a part of the cafe? You know, it's just food. It's like, yeah, but you're creating a whole atmosphere of people connecting with one another, and you're creating friendships that might transform lives, marriages, relationships, just by you creating a space for them to sit down and have a conversation. And I'm telling you, you communicate the why as much as you do the what, people are like, oh, I want to be a part of something bigger than myself, and I'm more interested in being a part of that. So it's been very helpful. Next thing, stop me at any point and have questions. Follow up fast. This all comes back to the systems. But if you got your systems in place and you know who the point of contact is and who's going to follow up with them, then that helps. If you have this big, like, we need 20 new volunteers for whatever it is, and then everybody signs up and they don't hear anything from you for a while, They don't think there was really a need. Yeah. You express to them, we need all these people, but we actually needed you bad enough that we actually knew how to follow up with you to get you involved ASAP. If you sign a connection card or you fill out something like that, like, we don't have hardly any policies in our church, but for us, one of the things is, like, you will be contacted on Monday. You just will. Like, we make sure you will get contacted on Monday. And we want people to know, like, if we're going to express a need, we want them, if they said we're willing to learn or we're willing to be involved or give some of our time, whatever it is, then we're going to do the honor to you to tell you what's the next steps right away. So before you ever even make any announcements to recruit volunteers, just ask those questions early on. Okay, who's going to be the follow-up? What are they going to have to do? When are they getting involved? Is there going to be a training? And have that for them right away. Follow up fast. All right? Then the last thing within the part of this aspect of recruitment that I would say is, I think it's important to differentiate expectations. There is a difference between leaders and volunteers. And I feel like sometimes what we do is we put all these credentials for leaders in the volunteer roles, and it's like all these hoops that people have to jump through, and they never get involved because you put the bar so high. I'm not saying don't put the bar high for leaders. I'm just making sure that we differentiate between the two. You know, if you're going to have someone lead a particular ministry area, we ask a lot of questions as far as, okay, what is the character of that person you look like, the commitment level of that person. You know, what's the chemistry aspect of how they're going to relate to people? We want to know more of what they believe, what their life is like. Those are leadership criteria. We don't look for volunteer leaders. We select leaders. We ask for volunteers. So we appoint and select leaders, but we ask for volunteers. And the way that we start to see who's going to be a leader, you know, this isn't the end all, but there's an acronym that we use, you know, in our church. As those people who are after more, to be after more, A-F-T-E-R. They're available, they're faithful, they're teachable, they're enthusiastic, and they're responsible. If they have those five things and they have people following them, then you probably got a leader on your hands. Not everybody in your church is supposed to be a leader. That's another thing that could, some people might disagree with that, but like, when we look at, like, say, the pastoral epistles, it's a pastoral epistle. It's written from Paul to Timothy, who's going to pastor a church. This isn't necessarily things for every single volunteer to have to live out every one of these to be involved in your church. Are there different things for people who teach? Yeah. Is there different things then for the person who shakes a hand? Yeah. How about this instrument versus the guy on stage singing? Like, we have those conversations. But if you differentiate the expectations early on, it's going to help you better communicate to the people what you're looking for. And then what happens is when we have people in leadership positions, and what we do is we start, one of the responsibilities we give them is we ask them to start finding other leaders. And then part of that selection is like, well, John said Bill is a great leader. Right? He's just really doing, he's knocking it out of the park here in this area. Then we start having those conversations about, okay, then how can we get Bill more involved or whatever, you know, male or female, doesn't matter for us. It's like we want to make sure that we give empowerment to people, but that selection thing is a big deal for leaders versus volunteers.
Right, what was the R on after?
Responsible. Because you want responsibility, right? I mean, I think a good leader, anybody's like, yeah, I'll do that. And if you didn't, sorry. Somebody else will then. So, yeah, available, faithful, teachable, enthusiastic, and responsible. After, more. Any other questions there with recruitment? Helpful. Once again, these are things we're trying. It's not necessarily, oh, we've got all these figured out. Like, these are like kind of our bullseyes, and sometimes we throw the dart way off to the left and like, yeah, remember, I probably should do that better next time.
How have you handled reluctant people? We're about 2 years in, and it seems like the all hands on deck thing that happens at the beginning is still going on in ours. We have about a group of 12 of us. We have a congregation of about 160, 200, including kids, but we still have 12 to 15 people kind of doing everything. Like, I'm on the worship team, plus I'm in kids ministry, plus I'm in outreach. So how long did it take for you to split that up and to kind of try to get people more focused in where they should be leading and not so spread thin?
Was you that mentioned the seats on the bus? It was just probably for us within the last, so after 18 months, it was like, okay, we have a, probably we hit a critical mass, we got a good volume of people, now we got to start figuring out how to rearrange the seats on the bus. So, I mean, I think that's based upon where you're at. At that time for us, we were about 250 people, probably 160 adults. And so as we had the necessary, felt like numbers, we began to, and part of our recruiting different volunteers, we had a new phase of it, was like, I would have brought up 12 people and said, these 12 are heroes. I mean, they have been believing this before it even started, and they've been doing this for the last 18 months. I cannot believe that God gave us such incredible volunteers. I would love to give them a break. And so we honored those people, and we also used them, because they were doing everything, and it helped us in recruiting another set of volunteers, because people were like, oh yeah, like I would love to help out and give them a break. And so we made heroes of those people. But like I said, part of the thing, and this is a little jumping ahead, but we have one of the responsibilities in our church is if you volunteer, people at our church would tell you, we tell them, you have two jobs. You have the job. So people say, hey, what do you do at Rice City Church? I have two jobs. One is, oh, I work in the campers area with the kiddos, and I'm also actively recruiting other people to work in the campers area with the kiddos too. So that is a part of just our culture. It's like you, if you're going to serve, then you're also part of it, is you're responsible for finding other people to be in that position. And so I feel like we probably had a lot of volunteers early on because we told them that's what you need to replace yourself fast. So I am not afraid at times to use the guilt card either. If I'm tired and I see my wife's burnout, you're not going to take advantage of my wife. And so I'll tell people that. I won't necessarily globalize it on a stage, but I'll go to defense for her quickly and start getting other people and rallying people.
We've had a couple times where, you know, we had people selected for the nursery or for our pre-K or older kids, and they didn't show up right before church for whatever reason. And so we would say, well, we're not going to have nursery because I'm not serving back there 3 weeks in a row. So just send the kids out, tell the parents they have to take their kids out into the worship center with them. And then hopefully people around will see, you know, there's like a little bit of a distraction in here. It's fuller than usual because we have all these kids. And so we're hoping that would illustrate the need for it. But we just found that people didn't. It's just kind of an apathy. Like, oh, that's not really my problem. I don't really care. So
yeah,
it almost backfired a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that. We haven't done that approach where you shut. I mean, if you don't shut down a certain ministry area. I will say, and I don't know all your context and who your pastors are. Pastor, if, especially in the kids area, if he's not the biggest champion of it, you're going to have a hard time getting volunteers for it. I mean, maybe I'm at an advantage because I have three kids. I have vested interest right there. Sometimes pastors, like, their kids are out of it, so it's like, whatever, there's other things. But we do best when I push and inject the passion to the kids ministry to get volunteers. If I put our children's leader up there, she'd do well. But they're just not going to respond. And so there is something about, you know, the pastor being the big advocate of serving and helping and communicating why this is shut down and what's going on. Why are the kids in here? And it's not the case, like, putting the dots together for people, because they don't. There's other people just, like, confused and be like, well, this is, chaotic. I'm not gonna come here anymore. So, so he needs the help in that. Yeah.
I think something kind of drawn on that like apathetic part is seeing that people aren't drawn by need but rather vision. And when you're like, well, we need, especially just in the way you speak to a volunteer, it's not so much, oh, we need you in this area, but like, hey, here's, I mean, you need them,
yeah,
but like, here's where we're going and here's where it could be. And if you come alongside and be a part of this team, we're one step closer.
Yeah. I mean, we live in a culture where there's constant pampering, and that conditions people. So you,
there's also, there's a lot to what you said about the pastor getting behind it at the pulpit too.
Yeah.
Because people listen to the pastor. There's a lot of weight there.
And is that leading by example? It matters. I mean, it means something to our church when I'm the one at the children's check-in for two Sundays. It tells them that we value this. Even more than that sermon I could have preached, I'm preaching a sermon right here. So, yeah.
We just launched our second campus. Our hard launch was on this past Sunday. One of the things that I really emphasize for our volunteers, overall, this logistic team and everything is not ever using the language of work, just more fun. You know, we're a community, we're a team. And that's like kept everybody motivated to continue to come each week and tow the trailers and do all that. And then get other people involved. Go, man, this is fun. We're friends, we're building community, we're building relationships. And never using those words at work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just, nobody wants to go to work.
It's one day off a week, right?
I mean, that goes to your systems thing. Sorry about it.
Yeah, you're good.
I think that's, I love that point about the systems, because you have to deliver on that promise, or else you undermine your own credibility.
Absolutely.
You keep saying, it's fun, you're going to build community, it's going to be fun, you're going to change lives, and then they don't hear any stories about it.
Yeah.
You don't follow up with them because they're not important to you. The systems make it possible to do anything effectively, and it really is work. It only takes a week or two before they're like, I'm not ready to trust you to jump in some other area. Or
That's where the weekly emails come out. Great job, you're awesome this week. Let's continue on, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, good advice. Sonia?
What about the volunteer that has transferred from another church and is trying to kind of put a different spin on their own agenda to why they're volunteering? They're consistent, but it's actually hurting the effort.
Yeah. One of my next points is going to hit that, so if I'll here, good transition. all right, so training. Let's do training for a couple minutes. And like the second point, I'll come up with what Sonia said. This is a business expression, but I think it's pertinent here. First thing in training, keep it simple, stupid. Right? I mean, if you overcomplicate it, you're overwhelming volunteers, and they feel like that there's this huge learning curve, and that effort alone caused them not to necessarily want to be part of it. We just experienced, we had one of the girls who came out to help us start the church, our children's director, she transitioned, she's still in our church, and she's actually went back to being a school teacher. And the new children's director who came in quickly realized how complex everything was. And our volunteers in the children's ministry, we've got 80 volunteers, but we're turning them over like crazy. And a lot of it was because it was just, they had a list of 15 things to do on a Sunday morning, and they're just like, and then when it came to like finding their lessons, it's like, here's this portal, they go to this app, and then they come over to this website to get this, and they have to go to Planning Center to confirm this reservation. And so they were, and I learned a lot from my wife. My wife is an introvert by nature, and so you give her a lot of things, you're going to shut her down really quickly. And what she always is, what I do is I run it through her, and I'm like, is this simple? Is this like steps 1, 2, 3? You know, there's a reason that those books, the So-and-So for Dummies, are so successful. It's because if you simplify, you actually magnify. And it actually helps you, in the midst of that, really focus on what matters. It's cutting stuff back. And so, you know, when it comes to simplicity, once again, remember people are not living and breathing this ministry thing. So think about it. If I've got 1 hour with them, if I got 2 hours with them, what is it that's most important in the children's area, for example? Like, okay, we want to do this, 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 and this. But at the end of the day, for us, it's like we want them to have a great experience, to hear about Jesus, and to feel valued. That's it. Yes, we might have missed the time clock here, and the video didn't work there, and we did this, 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 but like, you can call audibles along the way. And so we just try to make it as simple as we can, because when you make it complex, the stupid one is you. Right? Like, that's you. You are the stupid one, because you didn't honor them. Because they're already thinking of a billion things throughout the week. And we get frustrated, like, why didn't they prepare the lesson? And why did they start looking at it this morning? Because they're busy. Every one of us complains about busyness just as much as anybody else, right? Except if we're fortunate to be employed, we've had 40, 50 hours of the week to prepare that thing or whatever you're doing. And so, especially if you got, you know, mothers that have a lot of kids and extracurriculars, like, there's something about fighting the culture in certain areas, and there's other things that this is just the culture that we're in, so we've got to figure out how we can not add more weight, but actually lighten the weight and make them more effective. And so we will ask people in our church, like, you know, about how do you feel like you're informed in this? Is there too much? Do you feel like this is overwhelming? And we get feedback a lot from our volunteers, which helps us cut back stuff more and more and more. We have more expectations for leaders, so that's a little bit more complex, but like, we're talking volunteers. Try to make it as simple as you can. Next thing, show and tell the how. This comes to kind of what Sonia mentioned, but so if you don't set expectations, they will. All right, now that can sound, it's not to say that you shouldn't listen to people, gain ideas, because like we create forums and places where people can get feedback, we learn from that, we apply that, but the same thing, systems. Like we say when people come, like this is how we do it. So this is how we set up the table. This is how we do registration. This is how we go about taking kids to the bathroom. This is how we show the video. And we tell them how. Because if we don't, we say, oh, cool, you want to be in the kids' area? And you get frustrated because they didn't do what you wanted them to do, but they did what were told or shown what you wanted them to do. Then they're going to already say, well, this is how I want to do it. So if they're coming from another church, I am so excited that so-and-so does it that way at this church. But here at Rice City Church, this is how we do it. And if this is something that, you know, if you have feedback to that, I'd love to hear it. But for right now, this is how we do it. And we really, it's not to say we don't budge, because I feel like we're very open to apply new ideas. But we're very specific with our leaders to say, communicate it. This is how we do it. Show them and tell them the how. Because it's so important. But on the other side of that, the next thing is, we've got to be a people who empower rather than encroach. So once we show and tell them how, we get out of the way. Because people learn best through the opportunity, through experience, right? And so we don't want to be micromanagers. We want to embrace the art of delegation. And so once we've empowered them to serve in these areas, we feel like we showed and told them how to go about it, then the best way they're going to learn is letting them do it well and maybe even failing along the way and learning in the midst of that how I continue to improve. When people are empowered, when people feel like they are believed in, when people feel like that they're given responsibility and they actually are allowed to carry it out, your ownership in what's going on in that church and their hearts just skyrocketed. But when you've kind of come back and you're fixing all the tables and, you know, I like the Bible's looking this way and I got to do this, and they just spent 20 minutes making that table look the way that you told them originally, but yet you're still like nitpicking, that is so discouraging to them, whether you realize it or not. And you just have to think in those ways of like, when I show them and tell them how, I then empower them to do this, and then I got to move out of the way. And then there's times of evaluation, there's times of reproving and tweaking things, but you might have to just hold your tongue, especially on a Sunday morning or in the context where other people are there, because they could feel belittled. I think about it, like a lot of us are just big kids. Right? When I tell my daughter something or my kids something, or even going to discipline or tell them something different, one of the things we do is we move them to another space. I don't want to reprimand them in front of everybody else. And by you readjusting or telling them, oh, do it this way, or you should have done it this way, and it's, if you're in the proximity of other people, volunteers, you lost them. Now they just feel like they're dumb. And so honor them and empowering them and let them do well at it.
So that was people over power?
That was empower over encroach. Best way to learn is to give them an opportunity. And part of that is, so that's that, you know, I think one of the ways we empower them is they become our recruiters. That's where that two jobs thing comes in for us. We empower them by saying, you have this responsibility, and you're also supposed to actually recruit other people to fulfill this role as well. And so we trust you to find other volunteers. Like when we just, did our interviews for our new children's director, we had four sets of interviews. And the interviews were one with me, one with my wife and I, one with our staff, and the other one was with our children's director coordinators. They're volunteers. But if they said no, we probably weren't going to hire them. So we even brought people like that into the process because we care about their thoughts that much. And that for them, once again, it's like, you're actually going to ask us when you're going to hire someone? It's like, yeah, we are. I mean, we've got four other levels of interviews, too, to help add to that. You don't get the final call, but your opinion matters. So, and then lastly, and we'll see if there's any other questions, but the appreciation aspect, let me just say, express gratitude in a variety of ways. Express gratitude in a variety of ways. I don't believe you can say thank you enough. My wife and I go back and forth on it. She says, I think if you say it too much, you cheapen it. I'm like, I don't think so. I think people like to hear that they did a good job. And I'd rather express it than not express it. And, you know, there's the parable that Jesus tells, whether it's a parable of some people, maybe real life, of the 10 lepers that were healed and they all went away and only one came back to express appreciation, and Jesus commended this one because the other nine didn't. And, you know, this is a, I don't know where I heard it, but there's an expression that came out of that that teaching, but it was like, when you do not express gratitude, it's often interpreted as a lack of gratitude. Right? I mean, like, when you've done something and you know you've worked hard at it, and maybe the person that you did it for is appreciative, but if they don't say something, how do you feel? They're just not grateful for it. And so I don't want them to tell a different story than what's really going on. I'm going to express it because when it's expressed, then they know it's there. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about things in our church as far as how we can show appreciation to volunteers. A couple of those things include, I mentioned earlier, we make heroes. So we are always talking about, you know, so-and-so brought somebody to church, or this person serves in this area, and we have the people that are doing our announcements. They're not just staff people. They're people that are working in different areas, and we get them in front of people. We want to make heroes of people. We've done volunteers of the week, use them in sermon examples, recruitments, and all that kind of stuff. We give gifts. The first year we were there, we bought season tickets to the San Diego Padres. And it's not the most cheap thing when it comes to church planting. It's like, that's one of those that probably some people are like, you bought what? But what we did is we gave those tickets away to all our volunteers throughout the year so they could take their families to games, just to say thank you for serving. Nice. We give gift cards to people along the way. We host events. We, this past summer, did a thing we call the Pioneer Banquet. Because as you grow and more people come, and even as you get further from your launch, it's easy to forget about, right? I mean, we think in terms of technology. We're excited about the next update. We're excited about the new visitor. We're excited about this. And then all of a sudden, the people who got us there are the ones that, like, hello, I'm still your scaffolding back here. And so we had a whole banquet that we set, and we said, who was here for the first 6 months and who's still been here? We did a video to recap everything. And then what I did in that time, I used the story of Nehemiah chapter 3 when he records all the names who helped build the wall. And so we had 98 people there, and I personally said something about all 98 people. It took 45 minutes, but every single one of them got something specific that I said, how much they are valued in our church. Host events to do things, express appreciation. You know, what we do is we have three times a year that a respective ministry team does like a rally with their team, and then one time a year we have a huge volunteer blowout that we just have every volunteer from every ministry area come and celebrate. Embrace the language of we and our. If you say I or theirs or anything like that, they'll sniff it out. So it's we. Make decisions that consider your volunteers. So when we said we're going to two services, we said, here's why. Because our children's ministry volunteers need a service to go to. Yes, I know that that's going to be great for getting new people to come, but I told them we're doing this because we want you to be in here. I tell people, why are you guys an hour and 15 minutes and so strict on that? Is it because you don't want to have openness to the Holy Spirit? It's like, no, it's because there's 60 volunteers right over there with kids, and they don't care if the Holy Spirit moved in here, right? Because all that's moved is bowels in that room. They're ready for relief. And so when you tell them that you got their back, that means a lot. Inject fun in what you do. I think you mentioned that. That's huge. That's what we're about. We want to have fun. That's why we bought an ice cream truck to start the church. That's how we got going, as we went around the community in an ice cream truck. We're doing a Christmas extravaganza for the whole church, and last couple years we did a huge kickball game. This year we're going to be doing different dances, you know, so we're going to have different generations teaching different generations dances, and we're doing that kind of the Jimmy Fallon lip sync type thing. We're just in ugly sweaters and all that stuff. I mean, have fun. Take God serious. Don't take yourself so serious. Have fun. And then two other things to finish. Give them a break. Don't assume they're doing well. Ask them how they're doing. And then give them a break. We have our volunteers serve 2 times per month. And then you have to be in the service the other time. I mean, and you serve one, attend one, but you serve 2 times per month. If we have rock star volunteers, great. You're allowed 3, but we don't even let you go past that. 3 is your max. So figure out how that you can go about that. We take the last Sunday of the year off just to give people breaks as well, but figure out how to get them rotated out. And then lastly, pray for them. It's obvious, pray for them. And then tell them you're praying for them. Ask them what you can pray for them. Figure out how you can get people to be praying for one another. Because God will be the best physician in the midst of tiredness and burnout. I'm over. I would probably get in trouble for that. So, I'll let you guys go. Any questions, stick around. I'm more than willing to hang out. My email's on top of that sheet. Yeah. So,
thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.